10:34, great to be with you on this Friday morning. You are listening to RSN Central. Let's welcome in the team for Dean and Hamish, the great Dean Lester, the goat of the tipping world, and he joins us now. G'day, Dino.
Hello there, Gareth. Good to be back in 2021.
And Hamish McLaughlin has been everywhere. He was up on the Gold Coast. I think he is back now on the Mornington Peninsula running laps. Hello to you, Hamish.
Hello, Gareth. Good morning to you and to the listeners. And congratulations to you, Gareth. You and Dana, I understand, this week had a big moment. Well done. Terrific.
Yes, lucky man. Thank you very much for that, Hamish. Dino, first to you, did you enjoy
your... Can you take us through just the details, Gary?
Well, it was one of those... When I first decided to do it was actually after finishing work in December, and I wanted to do it in Perth, but we couldn't get there because of the borders. And then I was planning to do it up there on the Gold Coast, and it didn't work out. So it was a nervous Christmas, New Year period for myself. I was a little bit nervous about doing it.
After the half marathon debacle too, yeah. Where you didn't actually go to the line.
No, but I wanted to make sure it was perfect, yeah. Dino. And I went to you two lads to get some advice.
Well, things can become a pattern, can't they, Dean? Not finishing things off.
Yeah, that's it. When he had a few little hurdles there with the borders and that, I thought he might have changed his mind.
And I went to you two lads for inspiration, how to be romantic, because you guys are romantic. And in the end, I went to Jackalope, just down from your place, isn't it, Hamish? Only about a 50-metre kick in God's country.
Every time I'm talking to Dino on the phone, I tell him, I'll drop out in a minute because I'm driving past Jackalope. It's got the worst service in the world.
Okay.
I was going to say, you never get disturbed when you're proposing there by the phone anyway.
No. Well, so I was very lucky and she said yes. So she is a beauty, Dana. Yeah, so well, it all went well and looking forward to... she'll be doing all the wedding preparations, but yeah, it's exciting. So yeah, it was great. Anyway,
obviously Dean and I are delighted to be groomsmen. Thank you. Yeah. That was an honour when you texted that through this morning.
You're invited. MC, Dean and Hamish. Okay. Is that okay? You won't charge me a fee. Darren McCullough, I think, was he's pretty keen to MC, but I might have to say that Hamish and Dean have taken over.
I saw Macca's Mock doing a wedding on the weekend, and I think the groomsmen were all alive in the last leg of the quaddie, so he called the last leg home, which was terrific.
Well, that is a debate, and I think many people, and especially us punters out there, that when you get invited to weddings, and because wedding season happens a lot in spring, Dino, I think, and this won't happen to me, it's a bloody disgrace if you have your wedding on Derby Day or Cox Plate Day.
Yes, it is. I know of a former, top-flight AFL footballer that his partner or wife-to-be organised the wedding for Melbourne Cup Day. Oh. And he said, okay, but it's got to be a 9:30 service because the first's at 10:30 and we've got to have a big screen at the reception. And they had all of the above.
Oh, did they really?
Yes.
Unbelievable. What would you do to your mate if they said they're having their wedding, Dino, and Hamish, on Derby Day? Because there's a lot of weddings on Derby Day these days.
There are. I went to when I was a lot younger, went to a Derby Day wedding, and it was disappointing to miss out listening to Handy Proverb win the Derby that year, but went to the wedding nonetheless. But with modern technology, the phones might be out if the Derby's on whilst the service is on.
I went to one wedding, I think it was on Derby Day and Cox Plate Day, sorry, Hamish, that actually the priest, mid-service, announced the winner of the Cox Plate. I said, you sensation.
I was best man to Paulie Roberts, who got married in England. It was on the Saturday that Black Caviar was running, and the timing was just such a tight-run thing. I went in, we had the rehearsal on the Friday, and at the end of the rehearsal, I said, how long do you think this is taking? I think it was like a 2 p.m. service, and Black Caviar was running at 2:50 for the sake of the argument. He said, it'll be an hour from wider post. I said, can we just have a little chat about something? He said, I cannot believe you're asking me when people are flying in from all around the world to make the service a speedy one, in your words, Hamish, so that we can watch Black Caviar. Anyway, he started the service the next day with, I've been well informed by a number of the heathens in the bridal party to be swift. And everyone started applauding because they knew exactly what happened. So we got out the church, ran around the corner, went to the local pub, and a few of us had a pretty big bet on her because Michael Sullivan and Jerry Wall said, you can have $1.40 as we're walking out of Ascot on Friday. We thought it was money for jam and tried to pay for our plane tickets. It was a nervous wait for the photo, I can promise you.
0416905052. Tell us your favourite moments at a wedding during a race day or an important race day. We would love to hear from you. Plenty happening, Dino and Hamish, over the Christmas New Year period. So I'd be interested to hear, Hamish, your Hall of Fame nominee to kick off in 2021.
Well, my Hall of Fame, it was going to be the Indian 11 until I found out that King Kazu, who's Kayoshi Mayura, who's the world's oldest professional football player, is just set to go again. He signed a one-year extension, Dino, at age 54. He played in Brazil in 1986 in his first professional year. This is his 36th professional season. So when the season starts, he'll be 54, because I think he's 54 the day after the season starts. And he's been around, you know, he's been playing for, what, 80s, 90s, 10s, 20s, 21s, whatever they are. Just phenomenal. Oh, so he goes straight into the Hall of Fame to join a few others. But I just couldn't believe it. I'm 45. My kids asked me to get down and do sandcastles on the weekend. It takes me about a minute to get down and 3 minutes to get up. Playing professionally at 54 is terrific.
I'm worried that Boomer Harvey hears about this story. I think he might be back.
I agree.
He was quoted.
He'll be listening jealously.
He was quoted too, Hamish, that his goal is that he wants to play until he's 60.
Yeah, and he said, my aspirations and my passion for football are...
We just lost you there,
Hamish. Jackalope.
Yeah. I think he's still talking, Dino. We have lost him a little bit.
Yes.
Hey, Tom Brady's another one. He's at 43 years of age, Dino, and he's still playing some pretty handy football at the moment.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible the way he's just kept going, because he was being written off 7 or 8 years ago.
I think you're back, Haim.
Sorry, I just drifted past Jackalope to just see the scene of the crime. Yeah, I just find it incredible that you're playing in the mid-80s and still going now. But the other thing is, I think he's played all around the world, and clubs have always wanted his service. And, yeah, I think it's terrific, and it's a bit of a... I spoke with Dennis Pagan, Dino, during the week for a Sunday Herald Sun article, and he said, what is age in the end anyway? I mean, it's a number beside your name. Everyone said I was too old to train. Everyone said I certainly wouldn't find a winner at Flemington. He said, just do what you believe you can. Somebody said to me yesterday, and told my little daughter, they said, how come birds can fly? And she said, oh, because they got wings. He said, no, because they believe they can. There's a bit to it, isn't it? You just believe you're good enough and get into it.
Yeah, and we've seen that with the AFL, a bit of a changing of the tide with or the guard with David Noble and Chris Fagan taking on coaching roles, you know, where, you know, probably 10 years ago it was going towards the younger coaches.
And just before we get Dennis, on to our... Oh, sorry, Hamish, go on.
No, Dennis Pagan said to me, it's funny, he said he thought he was coaching the best long into his career at the end. He said, I didn't really have much idea what I was doing at the start. I'd coached 19s at North and the reserves at Essendon. Every year that went on, I got better at it, and then I got sacked. He said, my IP and my knowledge was best at the end, but no one seems to give the others a chance at that age. And he said, I'm glad to see it swinging a little bit now.
I can't wait for those AFL documentaries. I think 4 or 5 clubs were followed around there last year. And in the trailers that I saw on the AFL.com.au website, I jotted down a quote, and it's basically what you're all about in what you just said there, Hamish. And this is what probably Dennis Pagan was saying, and I quote, once you know your purpose, you're unstoppable. So obviously Dennis had his purpose and wanted to win at Flemington. Who knows? He probably wanted to win the Derby. And if you believe it and you can see it, Dino, you can do it.
Yep, absolutely. You've got to keep on that path.
Now, our topic of conversation this morning, and we'd love for you to join our conversation, 0416 905052. It's great sporting performances by internationals on Australian soil, and it was inspired by this performance earlier on in the week.
This is a magical moment for Indian cricket. They were not prepared to just save the game. They were wanting to go out, finish the tour in a blaze of glory. Young India has done it. Young India has shown the way. Young India is showing that they are not afraid. What a win. What a magnificent win.
It was a proud moment, probably nearly the biggest victory in Indian cricket history for mine, Dino. They only had two players that played in all four tests. I think they went through around 20 players for that test series. They had no Kohli after that Adelaide debacle when they were dismissed for 36. But somehow, in some way, they found a performance to defeat an Australian lineup. And many say after that Adelaide test, we had the best bowling attack in the history of Australian cricket. Now, that was being put to bed pretty quickly, but the Aussie lineup wasn't bad.
Well, it wasn't bad, Gareth. And to turn around a second innings defeat where you made, we're all out for 36 in Adelaide and go on and win the series was incredible. That last game where you think back to that first innings when Washington, who'd played 13 first-class games and hadn't played a first-class game since 2017, and was at the eighth wicket partnership, and they virtually turned the game around there. And then when the captain got out in the second innings and they promoted Rishabh Pant up the order, you knew that it was on. It was, they were going for the win, and ultimately it was magnificent to watch, and just what Test cricket's about, and the great rivalry that India and Australia are now. You know, it's well, not quite to the Ashes, but I think second only to the Ashes.
Your thoughts there, Hamish?
Well, the one thing that I listened to a lot of the Breakfast Club boys, and Adam White before the series was adamant there was going to be Australia by lengths. And he was talking about how the Kohli miss or the Kohli absence was going to be enough. And then how many of their first 11, Dino, were missing by the time they got to the third and fourth test? And I was listening the other day thinking there was as many as eight. Is that right, or am I getting that completely wrong?
Well, yeah, they played 20 players in the series, so you'd have to think that there was eight that were virtually novices in test cricket context anyway. And, the missing Kohli as captain seemed to only galvanise them, and maybe he's just better as a dynamic player. Who knows?
It was one of the great sporting performances that I've seen in international sport, especially with all of those stars, as you just pointed out, Dino and Hamish, that were missing. Okay, we'll start off with you, Dino. Your favourite what you think is the best international performance on Australian soil?
It's probably one of persistence, Gareth. Godolphin, we have Godolphin Australia, but the international arm of Godolphin had sporadic success, but they hadn't won the Melbourne Cup. And sportingly, they'd sent runners every year, and they'd had horses that were well in the betting like Mamool, and they'd gone close on a few occasions. But in 2018, they hit the mark. They won the Caulfield Stakes with Ben Battle. Ben Battle then ran second in the Cox Plate to Winks. Best Solution won the Caulfield Cup. But the first Tuesday in November was the race they wanted, and in 2018 it came to fruition.
Finch with a Prince of Arran on the outside. Rostropovich is running on, and Marmello back to the inside too. A Prince of Arran at the 200. Marmello wearing it down. Marmello gets up on the inside, and here comes Cross Counter. Cross Counter coming at Marmello. Cross Counter's flying. The Blue Army have done it last. Cross Counter has won the Melbourne Cup from Marmello, a Prince of Arran, Finch. Then
for whatever reason, I think that Melbourne Cup gets lost as great as it was. I mean, last year was great with Twilight Payment from the front, but when you watch back where Cross Counter came from, he just dodged the interference out of the straight at the back of the field and ultimately gave them the prize and Kieran McAvoy's third Melbourne Cup.
Hamish?
Well, I rang Dino this morning. In fact, I texted him and I said, what number Raider was Vintage Crop when he won in 1993? And he said he was equal first, which I sort of, that got lost on me a bit. I just think that Dermot World's plan to take a horse from the Curra and take him round to the other side of the world as a six-year-old and take on all the travel plans, and things were a bit more primitive, I would suggest, Dino, in 1993 to as they are now. It's a well-trodden path. So he was a pioneer in so many ways. And he got to Flemington in 1993, and it wasn't just a win. And as we hear now, it was a complete domination in the end.
Tiakau next, still in front at the 300. Led Frontier Boy a length and a half further back. Vintage Crop, he's coming home, the Irish Galloper. Tiakau Nick is in front of Frontier Boy. Vintage Crop is a danger, and Great Vintage is late. Tiakau Nick, but Vintage Crop has got him. Vintage Crop, the Irish horse will win the Melbourne Cup. Vintage Crop, two lengths. Tiakau Nick just held second. Mercator flashed up.
And Dino, when you look back at it, he was hurdling at the start of his six-year-old season and then went sort of through all the Leopardstown and the Curra Cup and went to Ascot and the Gold Cup and ended up obviously in Melbourne. But back then, I don't think many people thought that it was going to be a changing of the guard or something that was going to become such a common thing. But I remember I was the year out of school jackarooing and I watched it and Mum said to me, that's one of the most beautiful horses I've ever seen run. And you know, he was just a chestnut gelding that stretched out and it sort of took me. And since then, it's become more normal, Dino.
It has. I mean, it was a temporary facility at Sandown that he and Drum Taps, and he virtually slid into the Melbourne Cup. He won at 11-1, so he was well enough in the betting. But Drum Taps was number one, and he was ridden by Frankie Dettori. So he had all the publicity. He was the other raider, but it was Vintage Crop that was just going along. And Dermot Weld, there was a sort of a whisper that he was going to come in 92, but he stayed in Britain. I think he ran in the Cesaro, which is one of their good handicaps, but... When he produced him in 93, and all he kept telling us was that he'd lost 15 kilos on the trip, but he didn't tell us that he was 20 kilos overweight before he got on the plane.
Keep your SMSs.
The cunning Irish.
0416905052. Morning all, this is Paul from Adelaide here. My best overseas performance is Dermot Weld twice, and thanks Dino for all of the tips as well. And that media puzzle performance, Dino, we'll never forget that.
Well, that's right, and that was a bravery because he was probably lucky to, you know, he wasn't going to get into the field unless he won the Geelong Cup. So it was he had to win and get in, and he won the Geelong Cup, and then of course the Melbourne Cup. The Dermot Weld part probably got lost in the emotion of the Damien Oliver story there.
Dean and Hamish, have you ever come across Dermot Weld? I've never actually had the chance to meet Dermot, but I've listened to him in interviews and I have watched him in that movie. What is he like, Dino?
I got to interview him after Media Puzzle 1 in 2002. He was walking past and I grabbed him and I said, could I have a word? He said, you've got a minute? And I said down the line, please record this, and spoke to him for a minute, and it never got recorded. So that was my one moment with Dermot Weld, and it never got recorded.
I love the story, Dino, that in 93, I think, I'm not sure where it was, what bar it was, and how many people were around, but he obviously had an affinity with Australia, and he was obviously extraordinarily well-read, but he started just reciting Banjo Paterson off the cuff. Which I've always found him an extraordinarily interesting guy on the basis of he's got the bravery to bring a horse down to the other side of the world, to be one of the first to do it, to win it, to go home, to come back and do it again, but then to have the ability to then just roll off one of Australia's most famous poets. He appeals to me.
Yeah, he very much so. And I think that was from, I think the fascination in Banjo Paterson came from maybe in the 70s when he came out here and as a vet student, and he was with the great Tommy Smith for some time.
I was thinking, lads, about my moment. And Roger Federer in 2017, I know that you love your tennis, Hamish. That was a performance that will always stick with me because of what he went through in the latter part of 2016. I think he played in the Hopman Cup and he was unbeaten there. And then he arrived here in Melbourne. But he won that Australian Open when I think many of the experts were writing him off.
He was 3-1 down in the fifth, wasn't he, in 2017?
Yeah, and he found a way with a limited preparation.
Rafa.
Yeah, and against Rafa. So I think that's one of the great performances from an international that I've seen on Australian soil. But this performance at the Wacker, I think in 1997, by one of my favourite fast bowlers.
And a shout, he's got him first ball. So Ambrose is now on a hat-trick, having got rid of Boone and Border in successive deliveries.
I think he got 7-1 in that spell, Dino. He ripped through the Aussies at the Wacker on a bouncing pitch, and he loved bowling at the Wacker. But Curtly Ambrose, that particular day, he could do nothing wrong.
Yeah, magnificent cricketer, and that spell was, it was mesmerising. It was demoralising as an Australian, but to watch him apply his craft, and as you said, the Wacker was just made for someone like Curtly Ambrose.
What a charismatic team Gareth and Dino, the West Indies, were at the time. I remember growing up sort of mid-80s through to the late 80s, early 90s, just sitting on the couch listening to Richie Beno. You know, Dad would get us out early, but he'd let us, if there was a good test match on or a good one day, we're allowed to go and watch the start and ideally watch through. But when Viv Richards and Gordon Greenidge and Jeff Dujon and Richie Richardson and those, I think it was a quartet of quicks that were just terrifying. I was scared watching just from the lounge room in South Australia. Imagine being out there.
What's the one athlete, like, growing up, I always look forward to, like, if I had to go to the airport as a young kid to see an international athlete arrive here on our shores, who would that athlete be? For mine, I was fascinated and excited about Frankie Dettori, Dino. There was something about Frankie that fascinated. Like, I would watch him what he did there at Royal Ascot, and he's one man that I'd love to get a photo with or get his autograph, even though he's got a terrible record here.
Yeah, he has got a terrible record here. I'm lucky enough to have done both, Gareth, so yep. I've got one up on you there.
What's he like? What's he like, Dino, Frankie?
Well, he was very... He ended up at the American winners' party in 2010, even though he didn't ride the winner. He got involved and got a free drink and was very, very charming. And yeah, he's I've interviewed him a few times. He's a tremendous fellow. But yeah, he's success here. No, Viv Richards for me. Every time the West Indies were here, I just wanted to watch him play. He was the one I wanted to watch play.
I was in Barbados watching Australia take on the West Indies. I think it was 2003. Gillen was on the end of his honeymoon. He met us there with his wife, and we had a week watching the cricket with a series of blokes. It was a lot of fun, and we were flying out, and Viv Richards was in the line going somewhere else on a different airline. I just couldn't help myself. I was 28 at the time. I drifted over his line. I said, I just had to ask you, do you mind having a photo? He said, no, man. Didn't stop chewing his gum, stood there, smiled, and he had an aura about him. But Frankie Dettori was at the Magic Millions last year, Gareth, and he had a pretty big week. In fact, his week was so big that he declined any rides on the Saturday. He didn't even want to throw his leg over a horse for a couple of million bucks. He had a very big Sunday through Friday and said, no, I won't ride this weekend.
No, he's one of the great characters of world racing. It's 10:56. We'll take a quick break here on RSN Central. Great to be with you on this Friday morning, 0416 905 052, to join our conversation. The Friday fill-up coming up next. The biggest job of the week also not far away here on Dean and Hamish. Yes, this is RSN Central with our friends Dean and Hamish, and I was watching a lot of television over my little period off over the Christmas New Year, and I was watching The Office and The Friends. The Office,
both to sleep, Gareth.
Both UK and also, yeah, it does put me to sleep. The UK, but in a good way. The UK and the American version. The American version is so much better than the UK version. But I love Friends. Friends is my show, Dino.
I gathered that, Gareth. Yep. Yes. Yeah, no. Favourite character?
Joey.
Who's your favourite character?
Joey. I love Joey. He's definitely my favourite character. Just in front
is that
of
Matt
Chandler.
LeBlanc?
Hey? Yeah.
Here we... Is that Matt LeBlanc? Yeah.
You've got a bit of Ross about you, I reckon, Hamish, from time to time.
Was he the doofus, the sort of the dorky one?
David Schwimmer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you. David Schwimmer. He didn't go on to do too much. I was watching some Bruce Springsteen the other day, and when Courtney Cox gets dragged out of the crowd, it's still one of the good moments.
Yeah.
Dancing in the dark.
Dancing in the dark, yeah.
Hey, Hamish, tell us about the Magic Millions. Did you have fun? You were lucky to get there.
A lot of fun, yeah. Well, I went and saw the mother-in-law. She lives in New South Wales, and we got a text saying, you've got to get out by tonight. We'll go and have 14 days at home quarantine. And in the middle of the January, three kids, we thought we might do something else. So we skipped over the border, went to the Gold Coast early, which was good. We sort of took the kids all around that area and went to Wet n Wild and terrified myself on a couple of slides and got outdone by the kids on a few, but we had a really good time. And the Magic Millions, what was good about getting there early was you got to go the week prior and inspect a lot, see a lot of the fun people in racing, and then, you know, the sales themselves, given the COVID year, there was a lot of apprehension. I think they went through at 88%, average was $253,000 a yearling, top lot 1.9. You know, it was a great race day. There was only 15,000 there, restricted with COVID, not 25, but they've taken it, Dino, from something that was sort of on life support to a really healthy, vibrant sale. A lot of the best breeders are saying, no, I'd rather come here than go elsewhere now. All the good buyers are thinking, yeah, that's where I'll start my year. And this year, given who knows what happens in Sydney and Easter and stuff, it was a pretty punchy sale.
Yeah, it's an exciting sale. It's the first one of the year, so people are ready to go. And you produce a nice product like that. And then the race day used to be for 2 and 3 year olds, and that's where it's the real winner now. It expands out, and you see a horse, even though it's one of the bigger owners in Godolphin with Exhilarates, she wins the Classic as a 2 year old. She runs a place in the Guineas as a 3 year old, comes back and places in the Mares as a 4 year old. So, you know, has used the whole system magnificently. And there's horses there that can race right through, you know, 7 and 8 year old. So it's I think it's a magnificent day now, and the concept of it being ongoing is fantastic.
I think Outback Barbie Exhilarates was running in her third consecutive, Outback Barbie her fourth consecutive, and In yep. His Stride in the last, I think, sixth consecutive, in 16 in the Guineas, yeah. So, and of the 9 races, Gareth, 7 are $1 million or more, 2 of them are $2 million. The maiden kicks things off for $250,000. It's a hell of an incentive to go and buy a magic, you know, millions yearling, given, you know, a year later and the years thereafter, it's such a prestigious, well, becoming a prestigious but valuable race day, and only Magic Millions purchases are there.
And you can see how far it's come because of a vision by Jerry Harvey and Katie Page. But who's the brains behind? Is it Katie or Jerry?
Oh, they're a great combination. I think that's true with Harvey Norman as well. But Katie has got extraordinary energy, enthusiasm and vision, and Katie really gets overruled by Jerry. Jerry just sees Katie as being someone who gets it right a lot and just follows in. He's lucky to have someone with so much energy running both his passion in the racing and also his Harvey Norman life.
A lot of bargains too at the Magic Millions, so hopefully someone might have found a bargain this year.
Well, you talked about Exhilarates before. Exhilarates is the most expensive purchase to have won the two-year-old race at $600,000. There was a horse running in the two-year-old race that had cost $7,000 a year ago. So, yeah, I mean, Winks, I was explaining Winks to someone yesterday. They said, what would Winks be doing now? I said, well, she's trying to have foals, and we're talking about a $230,000 purchase. Mm-hmm. How it can be so life-changing at the time. You're just under the average. But, you know, you talk about relative value, Dino. That's one of the great purchases of all time.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, that spot of like 150 to 200,000, it's a lot, but with syndications and you can take little shares there, you know, that seems to be the sweet spot around Magic Millions, just around the average or just under. I think there's so many options, and as you said, right down to the $7,000 bargain through a Magic Millions sale.
Are you, Dino, more of a yearling purchaser because you've got a few horses, or you've owned a few horses throughout your time, or do you prefer to buy them as tried horses?
Oh, a bit of both, Gareth. I've got my own opinions with yearlings and
what is your opinion of yearlings, Dan? I'd be interested to hear.
Oh, I mean, it's beauty's in the eye of the beholder. You just, it's something that you like, or, you know, my partner Leanne's very much involved in that. She likes picking them as well. So, no, we've got a few that are now 2 year olds, see how they run. But I also, you know, I do form for a living, so I would like to think that you could maybe pick the odd one out that, you know, would be worth going on with.
Any of the first season sires, Dino, take your eye?
I thought there was some, the dominant stallions that, you know, the I'm Invincibles and that they were the great lots. But, you know, Shalar's got horses on the ground now, and obviously a big winner last week. But I think he's the one that's really going to capture the imagination going forward.
I know we don't talk politics here on this show, Dino, but this is a politic racing question. And I'm sorry, it's a question without notice. What's your beliefs regarding the debate sometimes from those punters? And it's sparked up once again with the point of consumption tax here in Victoria and the breeders. So the punters and the breeders and who puts on the show.
Oh, it's chicken and the egg stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Breeders don't get involved. We don't have a lot to bet on. And, you know, the breeders, yep, they produce good products like we saw there last week, but they've got a lot, they've got paddocks full of ones that can't make it to sales through injury or illness or bad confirmation. And what they often do, or usually do, is race them themselves. So they still get involved, and, you know, So they get taxed in lots of different ways as well. So I just stick to trying to find a winner.
That's why you're the president of the racing community, because once again, he makes a lot of sense. Now, the Friday fill-up, first of all, Dino, please. I've got my pen ready.
You have to wait till the last tonight, Gareth.
No problems. Patience.
Foxy Lady to beat your favourite trainer, Lindsay Smith, who's got Pucker Punyal in that race. But, oh, gee, I thought Foxy Lady was an enormous run last start after she knuckled at the start. And I think with better luck tonight, she can win race 8, number 9.
Who's your favourite trainer, Dino?
Favourite trainer? Anyone that trains a winner for me that I back. Hopefully Matt Laurie tonight about 10 o'clock.
Hamish, do you have a Friday fill-up for us or maybe the biggest job of the week?
Well, the biggest job of the week, I was reading some newspapers this morning and then started reading sort of through the digital agencies, and I saw Coco Gauff, who's in quarantine at the moment. She's taken the mattress off her bed, put it on the side of the wall, and has a coach throwing her tennis balls, and she's pounding the ball into the mattress. So my biggest job of the week slash next fortnight are those in the hotels trying to restore things after all the tennis players have stopped whinging and disappearing. They are finding new ways to get fit and do workouts in the rooms, to have a mattress pinned to the wall and be pounded into. I've often heard the next door room making some noise, but I've never heard that sort of ruckus going on in the next door room.
Dino?
It's a bit different way to trashing a room than a rock band anyway, smashing tennis balls.
I watched The Hangover on the plane the other day. I'd forgotten how you can trash a room, but those boys did a good job. The funniest part is when the Chook's walking around at the end, I just thought, where has the Chook come from?
That was a perfect segue after tipping Foxy Lady there in the last at the Valley, Dino.
That's right, exactly. Toughest job of the week, toughest job of the month, same topic, Craig Tiley, keeping everyone happy, from government to tennis players to, you know, with people with regard to the virus. I think his job over the next, the last 6 months and the next month, and keeping people appeased that it's it should go ahead, he's got the biggest job.
My biggest job of the night is Matty Way, because I think the Hobart Hurricanes are good things at 2.15 to defeat the Scorchers at $1.70, but he needs to make some runs, and I think he can. And
that's
bounce
where he
back.
Should be playing.
Yes. Thank you, Dana. You should be an Australian selector as well. Hey, boys, it's been a lot of fun. Enjoy the rest of your day. Have a wonderful weekend. And you're both beautiful men.
Thank you, Gareth. Good to be back.
Good on you,
Hamish.
When's
Dana coming on the show?
She's in contract negotiations as we speak, yeah.
To do the quiz or just to be sort of part of this trio?
The quiz will be back next. Oh, I just got to find a sponsor, but I'm not far away. Good on you,
lads.
See you guys. See ya.
Bye.